So the Pronto program is done, but what would it take? If not Pronto, then what? What would it take for you to ride your bike more, to actually use your bicycle as one of your primary forms of transportation? Let us know right now, because we have guests to talk to you about it. 206-543-5869, 206-543-5869. We're joined by Mark Hallenbeck, who is a bike commuter.
I am right now.
And by the way, with the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington. Hi.
Hi.
Again, we're at 543-5869 asking, what would it take for you to ride your bike more? And leaving Pronto, Mark, what was your take on what happened with this bike share program?
My take is relatively straightforward. They didn't get enough riders given the city investment, but the city also caused problems with the people who were running Pronto. The whole, we're going to take over this, and that limited their ability to do independent fundraising. So there were a variety of management aspects to this that also caused them problems. So a death by a thousand cuts, maybe. How's that my version? It's not nearly as good as the poetry you were just reading, though.
Right. It's pretty good. Well, you just heard there was an argument over whether when you do bike share, you've got to go huge. You've got to make it connected and big and everywhere and visible, and you got to market it, and it's got to be instantly a utility. Like, yeah, that's part of the transportation grid. I get it right away. And that Seattle, some people say it was just too small, didn't have enough of an impact.
There's an argument to be made there, but I don't think that's the issue really in Seattle. I think there are bigger issues about it being a utility. There's a safety factor. Do you really feel that this is a safe matter? The concept of size really means, can you get to where you need to go by this mode? And there's an awful lot of terrain features in this city that make that a difficult proposition, even though it exists. It's well known in Pronto that a lot of people took bikes in the morning on Capitol Hill and rode down to downtown Seattle. They didn't take them back the other way.
The bikes only work downhill.
They work downhill. It's not so much that they don't work downhill, they work on downhill and flat. Those are two out of the three.
True.
But that creates, you know, when you look at the city and you're trying to go from one part of the city to another, there are an awful lot of hills involved that really limits your ability to say, oh, this is big, this makes sense. And the reality is there are part of that using the technology that we're using, there were a lot of trips that even if it was big, wouldn't have been made. How much of that versus the helmet law, that's definitely a restriction. How much of that versus the weather, that's definitely a restriction. I mean, there are lots of different cuts in the thousand cuts that all played a part.
We're taking your call at 206-543-5869. What would it take for you to ride your bike more? And we have on the line Kelly Mesher, whose job it is to figure out how to get more people to use bikes as transportation. She's the Puget Sound Policy Manager with Cascade Bicycle Club. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, fine. What concerns and barriers to bicycling do you hear people most talk about?
Well, by far and away, the biggest concern we hear from folks is that they don't feel safe riding a bike in Seattle. And I think there's a couple of components to that. First, you know, riding a bike in an urban environment is a skill like anything else. You know, a lot of us, when we learned to drive, started out in a parking lot, getting comfortable with that, and then slowly made our way onto neighborhood streets and out into traffic. And it's the same with riding a bike. You have to practice and feel comfortable and then learn how to ride in the city.
Was there something about Seattle that makes people feel less safe than any place else?
Well, I think the other factor I was going to mention is that, you know, folks need safe and protected places to bike. And so, you know, that relates to how we build our infrastructure in the city. Cascade and other safe streets advocates are really interested in seeing the city build out a network of connected bike lanes so that people of any age or any skill level can feel safe getting around the city, getting to the places that they want to go.
Yeah, that echoes some of our listeners right now. Right on Twitter, for example, Aurelia says, protected lanes or separate trails. Frank says, a physical separation between dedicated bike lanes and the road. And Natalia writes on Facebook, bike infrastructure that protects riders and makes it clear that bikes also have a right to the roads. And are those issues having anything to do with Pronto, or just they're still there even with Pronto gone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's really too bad that Pronto has gone away for now. But I do think that for someone who's not used to riding regularly, that picking up a bike in a busy downtown area and then sharing the road with, you know, cars and delivery trucks is a pretty scary thing to do. So I hope that when we try bike share again in the future, we'll have a more built out, protected network of safe places to bike, and more people will feel comfortable taking those short trips.
One more question for you, Kelsey. You said something that surprised me. You were telling us that there is another barrier, which is seeing hardcore looking bicyclists around town in spandex, basically. Will you explain that?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, people who maybe don't ride regularly might have a perception, the cyclists that are often very visible are, you know, suited up and ready to go for a long recreational ride. And it might just seem like, that's not something that's for me. But in reality, you know, people use bikes all over the world for different reasons. You can ride in your regular clothes. You can use a bike for a short trip, maybe to link up with light rail or a bus stop, or to just, you know, go meet up with a friend at a restaurant down the street. And biking can really fit into your life however you want it to fit. So you don't need to go all the way to enjoy bicycling and reap the benefits of it.
Aren't there companies that specialize in non-alienating looking bike wear?
Yeah, there are. And there's more options popping up around the city all the time.
Kelsey Mesher, Puget Sound Policy Manager with Cascade Bicycle Club. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
We're talking about the demise of Pronto, the bike share program, and bigger issues with bicycling in general. And Steve is on the line in Linwood. Steve, hello.
Hi there.
What's the issue you want to highlight?
Well, for me, I was a regular bike commuter from my Green Lake location down to Pioneer Square back in the early 2000s. It was a fabulous ride. It was about 5 or 6 miles each way. And I really enjoyed it until I found that every single day involved some confrontation over, you know, sort of lane rights with someone in a car. And I wasn't going to win that battle at my, you know, 25-pound bicycle versus the 2,000-pound car. Now, in contrast, I work in Linwood, which is about an 11-mile one-way trip. And I ride the Inner Urban Trail, which is spectacularly relaxing. It does everything that a bike ride should. I'm only coming up against cars every 10 blocks or 5 blocks, and I can manage that. But it's the last, for me, it starts at about 110th down to where I live around 75th. That I've got about 35 blocks of just, frankly, hair-raising traffic with people. I said earlier, it's people looking down at their cell phones, you know, texting while they're driving. And despite my garishly colored outfits, somehow people don't see me. And every day I'm on the bike, I feel seriously life-threatened. And that kind of ruins your commute, if you see my meaning.
Steve, still garish in Linwood. Thank you, Steve. So there's Steve's answer to that question. The thing other people were saying, protection, separation, and he's got a trail. Mark Hallenbeck, do you see, we're going to move on to other transportation issues, bigger, physically, literally bigger, but last question on bikes. Do you see bicycles in our lifetime becoming the integrated Seattle transit option that some people dream of?
Yeah, I think it's distinctly possible.
Is it on the way? Is it happening?
They're making the reasonable good first steps towards doing it, thanks to a lot of advocacy work, but also because as the area becomes denser and more mixed in usage, that sets up bikes to be much more competitive in the environment. And they take up relatively little space as a result of their small size. And that's good when you're in a dense environment. Space becomes precious. And so things like bikes become really good. If you look at Amsterdam in the 1970s and late 60s, it was very car oriented. If you go there now, it's incredibly bike centric. So is it possible? Sure, we could follow that same path. And it's distinctly possible that we will.
Meanwhile, let's move to the very car centric program that is the transit tunnel. We have Bertha about to crown here, emerge from the earth any day this week after quite a journey. The boring machine was stuck down there, hit a pipe, it leaked at the seals, got gritty, and it was stuck for almost 2 years. It looks like, and we're worried, what's it gonna, what if it breaks down under skyscrapers? Well, near the Space Needle, this week it's going to emerge. I would love to see that video, by the way. My question for you is when, that's just the first step, right? So when this tunnel...
The hard step.
The hard, yes. The first, the hard early step. When this tunnel is actually complete, what do you think traffic will look like in the Seattle area? Any different?
Well, definitely it'll look different, but how different is all, I can't predict because I don't know what the policies will be. A lot will have to do with how expensive the tunnel is, and a lot will have to do with...
Why? What does the expense of the tunnel have to do with the traffic picture?
Well, if you look at 520, you put a toll on 520, you didn't really change anything else in terms of driving capability at that instant in time, and like 15% of the traffic all went away.
And this is a toll tunnel.
And this is a toll tunnel. And so there will be a bunch of people who, no matter, I mean, your options, if you don't use the tunnel, are going to be surface streets through downtown or on the waterfront, or they're going to be going over to I-5. And none of those are great options. But if you ask anybody who's using I-90, I-90 is not a terribly great option either, but we still had a whole bunch of people go over to I-90 to avoid paying the 520 toll. So if the toll is too high on the tunnel in downtown, then all those people will either be on the surface or they will be on I-5, or we would hope that they instead hop in, you know, the new rapid ride routes that show up to help transport people. If everybody gets on buses, life will be great. If everybody tries to drive through downtown Seattle will suck. Although it might be moving so slowly that the bikes will be great because you'll just zoom on by in the bikes. I-5, if everybody goes over to I-5 because downtown sucks, I-5 will be even worse, although the people who will really suffer from that will be Shoreline. So they're going to have to find the sweet spot that the toll prices aren't so high that you push too many people away. You want people to use the tunnel. If as many use the tunnel as use the viaduct today, it'll be great.
What's the final thing we ought to know, Mark Hallenbeck with the State Transportation Center, University of Washington, about our travel life, our commuting life?
Always look for doing different, better options. Try every once in a while something different, whether it's walking or biking or taking the bus or, you know, sharing your carpool. If you look for different ways to get around, the new modes are showing up, new options are showing up, and they often involve things that improve everybody's life. So look to be
That's creative. True. If you're in a rut, you might not know all the stuff that's actually going on. Like, options may have changed for you. Look into it.
The biggest thing about One Bus Away and Google being able to map your bus is you can actually figure out how you can go from where you are to where you need to be on a bus. That's a huge thing, that getting around the unknown. That's a really great option. So be creative. Try every once in a while to do something different. You might find a really good option.
With the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington, it's Mark Hallenbeck who got here by either foot or bike.
Bike to work, foot from work to here.
Yeah, not bad. And you're looking in good shape, too. Thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome. Happy
you,
to be here.
It's KUOW's The Record.